Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Hey, Lulu here. Whether we are romping through science, music, politics, technology, or feelings, we seek to leave you seeing the world anew. Radiolab adventures right on the edge of what we think we know, wherever you get podcasts.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC, and on this September 11th, 2012, we honor those who lost their lives here in Lower Manhattan and elsewhere. And on this anniversary, among all the remembrances and the news of the day, let's talk about the announcement late last night first that the Bloomberg administration and the Port Authority have reached an agreement, what they call a memorandum of understanding, over the future of the 9/11 museum. The museum was slated to open today, but its construction has been stalled for almost 6 months by political and financial squabbling. Families of the victims have accused the Cuomo and Bloomberg administration of playing politics with the plans. Our own Bob Henley is here to discuss the developments. Hi, Bob.
Hi.
And before we talk about the agreement itself that was announced last night, give us a little context, because this is a classic case, isn't it, of something that everyone agrees upon, getting caught up in a political power play?
It's really very unique to that 16-acre site in the sense that you have the Port Authority, which is such a unique creature created by an act of Congress in the 1920s in terms of it being a bi-state compact. It requires both the support of the political class of New York and New Jersey. It is its own government. In point of fact, it has sovereign immunity. It has its own building code, if you will. That's also quite controversial. So have the overlay of the governments of New Jersey and New York, the Port Authority, yet a third entity, and add in the victims, you have this political Dungeons and Dragons. One of the things that former Governor Patterson said about, you know, the costs have gone up for everything down there exponentially. And he said behind the scenes, what people didn't realize is it was his recollection that what people don't realize, every time there was money spent on the World Trade Center, the New Jersey side of the Port Authority wanted similar money spent in New Jersey. And that's the kind of thing we don't get to see in public.
So the history of the disagreement is at least in part over money, you just explained. Is it also power? Is it also design? Is it also just taking credit for the rebuilding process?
It's all of that. I think also we saw, look at the evolution of the name. It was first going to be the Freedom Tower, right after the wound, and Governor Pataki really picked up, and it became, if you will, sort of a battle cry. It got us into Afghanistan. It got us into Iraq. So many things have happened since as a consequence. With it, people mastering the imagery and the power of that tremendous loss, even as people were still grappling with it. And one of the things that happened in the process is things, you know, the difficulty of building things in New York only got more compounded. Historically, Lower Manhattan, and indeed, as we've reported, throughout New York City, it's always been a problem to build things. It was compounded because of the symbolism. Now it went from being the Freedom Tower to One World Trade. That gives you a sense of the narrative arc.
Now, the museum itself, it'll be 100,000 square foot, 7 stories underneath the memorial itself. It'll contain thousands of artifacts, audiovisual displays, profiles of the victims, photographs of the 19 hijackers. We have a source from the content side of things who says, look, we have the money, we have the plans, we have the public support. We're just being held up by politics.
Well, actually, there's also a very strong contingent of Norman Siegel's representing some of the victims' families, Sally Regenhardt, who lost her son, a probationary firefighter. There's a lot of controversy there. I mean, whenever you take upon yourself, we're going to deliver the history, that's very powerful. Look at the controversy that happened with Hiroshima in the Smithsonian how many decades later. And so soon after this traumatic wound, which I still ran into people on the train today who still can't go down there. Even today, this long
because
after.
Because it's too traumatic.
Because it's
for
too
them.
Traumatic. And so while there's a whole question about operating revenue, there's discussion that they're going to need $60 million a year to operate it. That's not inconsequential. That's kind of the question mark. How is that going to be maintained?
So is it also a curatorial decision that Bloomberg, Cuomo, and others are holding this up because they want design control?
Well actually, it's when you read the Memorandum of Understanding, what it does do at least is give a framework for them to begin discussions. It's kind of surprising and shocking that some 10 years later we finally have this on paper. But they even want control and a consensus model for what kind of ceremonies are going to occur there. And so one of the controversies that some of the victims' families who actually have pending litigation in state court is the very controversial question of taking the human remains that are still with the medical examiner and entombing them in actually the museum itself. The victims' families, as represented by Norman Siegel again, we don't know how big a universe that is, would like to have them entombed above ground at the memorial and not part of a commercial venture. So I think we have to keep in mind and actually be patient with ourselves a little bit and consider, as I said before, the question of Hiroshima. How many years after that and we still couldn't reach consensus?
WNYC's Bob Henley, as we talk about the state of the World Trade Center site itself, if anybody wants to get in on it, 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692, or you can always post to WNYC.org, click on Brian Lehrer Show, or tweet at Brian Lehrer. Let's talk about the agreement, the Memorandum of Understanding that was announced last night by these various political parties. What was announced? What was resolved?
Well, what was resolved was a framework to go forward, because in the mix that you laid out about the Port Authority, New York, New Jersey, and New York City and Mayor Bloomberg's interest, considered that we had the Foundation Memorial Museum Nonprofit Board, which becomes yet another entity. What this does is lay out a way that people can raise their grievances. And most importantly, I think the breakthrough comes in transparency for the financial condition of the Foundation Museum, and requires all the parties to put their numbers and expectations on the table. And as we know, with any great collaboration, it's about managing expectations.
The two sides issued this Memorandum of Understanding, which outlines the way in which the Foundation and the Port Authority will share resources, closer coordination as they move forward, cash payments from the Port Authority to the construction process, sharing financial documents with each other, creation of an advisory committee to oversee the process. I think this is about the 29th advisory committee.
Right. And,
you know, we'll take just a minute here and say, shouldn't they have had a plan to coordinate and share information from the beginning? Not that we can change history.
I think that, and we haven't even thrown in the mix the Lower Manhattan Development Corporation. I think that what happened here is that the sheer scale of this, I mean, that's another thing we have to keep in mind. You know, in the two-dimensional world of pictures, it's like, well, just build a tower up. But when you work that site, and we've been down there a lot over the last 11 years, that was really so much had to happen below grade, because it's really the nerve center for so much of Manhattan in terms of the utilities running through there. And so while there was all kinds of cost overruns, and we've documented that, there are some cases of fraud, waste, fraud, and abuse, certainly. In fact, there was one case, how quickly forget, one of the most effective cases District Attorney Morgenthau brought out at the end of his tenure was the fact that, now consider the cynicism of this, that the concrete testing companies who certify that the concrete's being poured to a certain density actually came up with a way to fraudulently cook the numbers so they can make more money on this very World Trade Center tower. Now, if that's the kind of cynicism we have, we shouldn't be surprised with the current circumstance we're in.
Absolutely. But in this Memorandum of Understanding, the Port Authority, to go through some of the specifics,
sure,
has pledged to give $12 million more as needed for construction, as much as $1 million a year for 30 years for any from any operating surplus beginning in 2018. But it has already contributed $280 million in private donations and more than $330 million.
Join the foundation. The foundation's going to kick this money in, right?
Right. So is $12 million from the Port Authority really going to make that big a difference?
Well, the other thing, too, is that the Port Authority, and I think their big win here, was cutting their liability. They estimated to be $300 million down to $150 million. So it's splitting the difference, in essence. I mean, I think the big question is, where is the $60 million that's going to come from? Where's it going to come from? And there's been some call by some of the victims represented by Norman Siegel again for the National Park Service to run it. There's a concern about the fact, I guess I just got off the phone with Norman Siegel saying it. At this point, it feels like it's all for politicians and bureaucrats. They're concerned that there aren't any family members on this site advisory panel that's trying to get the reset going. And I think they'd like to see some engagement.
The political squabble goes all the way back to 2001 when Governor Pataki and Mayor Giuliani began to argue over who would take the lead in the rebuilding process. This is just weeks or months after the attack. So is this all about upstate versus downstate, governors versus mayors, and who gets credit for the process? Or is there anything concrete at play in the back and forth?
No pun intended.
That's right.
I think that part of the problem, with, as we said before, is the very nature, the Byzantine nature of the Port Authority arrangement. I mean, the Port Authority itself, I mean, let's consider, this has been an institution in crisis. Navigant Consulting, which was tasked by both Governor Cuomo and Governor Christie to do a really deep analysis of the Port Authority, first of its kind, I think, since the 1920s. In 10 years, the agency doubled its debt from $9 billion to $21 billion, and it increased the pay for its workforce by 19%. There's a question of accountability here. So you have this agency that is really unaccountable, that requires for any kind of change both legislatures in both Albany and Trenton to adopt the same precise language for change down to the last period and comma, pretty much in a political culture where people are mugging for the camera and trying to posture for their own political advantage, and then throw in the collective trauma that the region, the nation, indeed the world feels.
We have a caller who wants to question your analogy between this and the Hiroshima Memorial Museum. Lamar in Manhattan, you're on the air. Hello.
Thank you. Good morning, gentlemen. I just think that that it would be more of greater value and meaning if there was a reference or concern about the construction of a Pearl Harbor Memorial Museum rather than the Hiroshima Museum, which has had similar problems as to the World Trade Center. And I ask your guests, has the mafia influence contributed to this conflict in the construction of the museum during this 10-year period?
That's a wide bunch of questions, and I'll take them in sequence. I was referring to actually not so much the Hiroshima Museum, but the question of how an exhibit was depicted historically. And so what I'm talking about is with museums and history, we're talking about reaching a broad consensus about what exactly occurred when we're still not clear on what happened. So that's what I refer to in that controversy. That's why so many textbooks just stop with the war in Vietnam when it comes to history.
And then
the other question about the organized crime question, this has been well documented. I mean, the Deutsche Bank deconstruction, which was part of this, you may remember Deutsche Bank was a 40-story building that had 15 stories of its facade torn away. It became contaminated. It needed to be deconstructed. That's been widely reported. There was all kinds of criminal allegations. It was alleged organized crime got involved with the dismantling of it. The cost went up exponentially. Excuse me, Bovis Lendlease, the chief contractor, was found. There was a fire, actually, that happened in 2007, where two firefighters died because of the deconstruction problems. That added cost. Now, there's no doubt that the culture of corruption that existed in New York City historically with organized crime and cost overruns and contractors taking advantage did not take a holiday because of the fact that it was ground zero.
We looked it up, and the Pearl Harbor Memorial opened in 1962, which was 21 years after that attack.
Not a quick turnaround.
And I don't know much of that history, but it sounded like the caller was referring to there having been mob involvement, and who knows. We should acknowledge, Bob, that while it's been over a decade, One World Trade did recently become the highest building in New York City, and the memorial is open, even if the museum is not. So does this feel like the final piece of the puzzle, this back and forth that's ongoing about the museum?
I think it's operational questions going forward have to be resolved, and of course the litigation about what happens to human remains. But I will tell you that when you're down there and see people from all over the world looking up, it is really transcendent and magnificent. There's just the power of it, the ability for us to pull ourselves together and do something collectively. And the reflecting pools are is equally transcendent. I suggest anyone who can bring themselves to take the time to go down there, not today, but some other time.
Indeed.
It does capture, I believe, the significance of what occurred.
It is breathtaking. And working in Lower Manhattan, I see it on a regular basis. Just to walk down the street, and it's still new enough that to me it's like, there it is. It's
right.
All the way up there.
Right.
Is anybody occupying it yet?
Well, what happens is you see people. I mean, we had last year, I guess the president was here, but at times that are non-ceremonial, that whole area is just mobbed with people. And I think the thing I'm stunned by is still people coming from all over the world who really are always amazed at the scale of what happened. That's the thing that television and video images just doesn't do justice, is how big an area. And I guess the other thing, too, is the sense of the number of names and the totality of loss, I still think we're dealing with.
So last year, there was a mad scramble to have a memorial in place to hold the ceremony on the 10th anniversary after years of slow progress. And now this museum agreement was announced last night on September 10th before the 11th anniversary. What evidence do we have to think that things won't stall again for 364 more days?
I think that because we'll have the back pressure of Mayor Bloomberg's legacy here because he's leaving office, I think we saw analysis that they hope it will be open by 2013. So I think that a lot of prestige is on the line now. I guess the key question here is, as I said before, the operating expenses going forward. We're in a situation where some people think we're on the verge of a double-dip recession. Resources are going to be difficult both for the city and for the state and federal government. How do you carry that carrying cost going forward is really an open question.
WNYC's Bob Henley, thanks a lot.
Thanks.
And coming up next, we continue to honor the memory of those lost on 9/11 11 years ago by talking not about the past, but about the present and the future. We will talk to Eboo Patel, founder of the Interfaith Youth Corps, which trains young people from different religions to organize interfaith service projects. And we'll take your calls on what kinds of service you perform. Stay with us.